What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
Happy end of 2018.
Oh, my God. How is it possibly here?
I don't know.
Sort of weird and crazy.
Oh, I know. It's so cliche to say how time flies.
But it does.
But it does. It's that thing where, you know, the seconds go by, the minutes go by, the hours go by.
525,600 minutes.
How do you measure?
Measure a year.
How about love.
Thank you for joining our musical theater podcast.
Seasons of Love. Okay. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts and the occasional partial harmonies of Keith and Katie. Katie's a much better singer than I am. When we sing together, I just dip really low.
She
takes the lead.
Yeah, right.
In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
This is our special year-end episode of The Pop Shop. My, how that time flies. So we'll be recapping some of the big winners on Billboard's 2018 year-end charts, including Drake, Taylor Swift, and Post Malone.
Posty!
Plus, we've got an interview with someone who made a splash in a big way in 2018. We have an interview with Dan Smith from Bastille. We talked all about the group's mega hit, Happier, with Marshmallow, their latest Other People's Heartache mixtape, which includes covers of Cat Stevens and En Vogue.
Of course.
And their next album called Doom Days, coming next year. So stick around for all that.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, and we really hope you do, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider, and, you know, that way you won't miss a single episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts. So, with the year coming to a close, and considering Billboard announced its 2018 year-end charts recently, we thought it would be fitting to go over some of the notable highlights on our year-end charts. So, without further ado, the big daddy of all the charts, the big kahuna, the chart.
The champagne poppy of charts.
That would be...
Not to give things away.
You just gave it away. Our top artists list is sort of the biggest list of them all. And on our top artist list, Drake is number one. It's probably no surprise to anyone that's paid attention to pop music or music in general in 2018.
Yes.
But Drake rules as Billboard's top artist of the year and scores the year's top Billboard Hot 100 song with God's Plan. It's the first time he's been tops on either year-end tally, and he's just the third rap act to be the year's top artist, following 50 Cent and Nelly. Believe it or not.
And, like, he had three number one hits this year on the Hot 100.
Yeah. And
three.
You may have heard of that album called Scorpion.
You might have heard of it.
It's just, you know, it was Drake's year, and the rest
it
of us were just sort
Drake's
of living in it.
Year.
So here's the fine print about our year-end charts. Our year-end charts are based on chart performance on our charts dated December 2nd, 2017 through November 17th, 2018. That means the charts dated. And that actually reflects, like, the data kind of, like, almost like a week and a half-ish before those chart dates. So it's almost like we're, like, a November to November range, which is kind of how a lot of year-end charts work. The year-end top artist category, specifically, where Drake is number one, ranks the best performing acts of the year based on activity On the Billboard 200s chart, the Billboard 200 albums chart, and the Billboard Hot 100 songs chart, as well as streaming, social media, and Billboard box score data. I think we just got a phone call. Now, data registered before or after a title's chart run is not considered in these standings. So, you know, if an album came out shortly before the chart year began, then, well, that activity doesn't count on our charts because it wasn't on the chart during the chart year.
Yeah.
Now, that methodology detail and that sort of November to November kind of period accounts for some of the differences that you'll see between Billboard's year-end lists and the list that you'll see at the top of 2019, which show Nielsen Music's top songs, artists, you know, albums of 2018, because that's actually the sort of the full calendar year.
Because they're being all stodgy and following like the actual, you know.
Yeah. So if you enjoyed all of those stories, if you enjoyed all those stories that I wrote or kind of edited for our year-end charts, tune in at the top of January when you'll see more from me about the Nielsen calendar year.
Yeah.
You know, because it just never ends.
So following a very male-dominated 2017, where not a single woman ranked in the year-end top 10 overall artist list for the first time since 1984.
Yeah, and that was ridiculous. I did that research a year ago, and I'm like, I couldn't believe it.
Well, it was different this year. Three women are among 2018's top 10. We have Taylor Swift at number 4. Cardi B at number 5, and Camila Cabello at number 10.
Friend of the podcast, Camila Cabello.
Yes.
Now, Swift tops the year-end Billboard 200 albums chart as well with Reputation, making her the first act to have the year's top album with three different releases. She previously did it in 2015 with 1989, and in 2009 with Fearless. Now, Adele has claimed the year-end number one Billboard 200 album three times as well, but she did it with two albums.
Ah, yes.
25 did it in 2015, and then she did it twice with that album that you may have heard of, 21, in both 2011 and 2012, which means, like, she had the most popular album 2 years in a row, which is just nuts. Like, I think at the time when I wrote that, I think the last album to have done it before her was Thriller.
That puts it in perspective.
Yeah, like that just sort of like, oh, that's how popular that album was.
Anytime you're like, the only other person who's done it is Michael Jackson, then you know it's a big deal.
You know you're in like some weird other universe of like chart phenomenon and success. Elsewhere in the top 10 on the Billboard, the year-end Billboard 200 albums chart, Post Malone actually has two albums in the top 10. And that's the first time an act has doubled up in the top 10 on the year-end list since 2010, and the first time a hip-hop act has ever achieved the feat. Post Malone's 2018 release, Beer Bongs and Bentleys, ranks at number 3 on our year-end list, while his enduring 2016 set, Stony, sits at number 9. That Stony album just wouldn't go away.
That's wild. So collaborative singles continued to grow in popularity in 2018, as a record 7 of the top 10 year-end Billboard Hot 100 songs are team-ups, led by, of course, the unstoppable Bebe Rexha and Florida Georgia Line's Meant to Be.
Friend of the podcast, Bebe Rexha.
Indeed.
I have to say that every time we mention someone now. I know people are probably tiring of it.
No, I love it. Well, and it grows.
It grows.
Because we keep talking to people.
And when we say collaborations, you know, we mean songs that were, you know, by artists who don't normally record together. So obviously, Bebe and Florida Georgia Line don't normally record together. And, you know, it's just sort of incredible to see, you know, how collaborations are so sort of
the
normal.
Norm.
It's just it's very accepted and very normal. And there was a time when that wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
Like I remember when it was like a big deal when like Mariah and Boyz II Men got together.
Yeah.
For Once Sweet Day, or when like Madonna and Britney did, you know, Me Against the Music. Or it was very unusual for collaborations like that to happen. It used to be an event. And now collaborations are so normal, they're just not really events anymore, which I think kind of takes away some of the fun of like what at this point would constitute like an event collaboration. Like, who would it have to be?
Yeah, I'm furiously typing here. I did an interview.
I was stalling because I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I did an interview with Alanis Morissette. Like, when was this? Now I gotta look this up again. It was in 2015.
Oh, God.
And it was when she sang with Demi Lovato at the AMAs. And she talked about how weird collaborations were in the 90s, and that it was especially weird in rock music, but now, like, all bets are off.
Right.
And she, her quote was, in the 90s, collaboration was an odd thing. It was like Picasso and Monet doing a painting together was just kind of gross. And I really liked that analogy, because, like, yeah, that's, it's, when you think of it, and they are artists, we call them artists, it's, that's a weird idea, because it's such a singular personal art form, mm-hmm. but then it's clearly, like, people, you know, the lines are no longer there.
The collaboration, the collab, collaborations, say that word enough, and it just seems weird. The collaborations that were sort of before the 90s that, and this is a tangent, this isn't part of our notes, the ones that I remember as being, like, big hits were usually kind of unique moments, like, you know, Barbra Streisand and Neil Diamond doing You Don't Bring Me Flowers, which in itself never meant, it wasn't meant to be a duet in the first place. It was a fabricated duet where a radio station took two existing solo recordings of the song by Barbra and Neil, mashed them up, and started playing it. And then Neil,
you just
and,
taught me something. I did not know that.
What? You didn't?
Did not know that.
Oh, I'm sure I've said it before on the show. Well, Barbra,
maybe when Jason co-hosted.
Barbra and Neil both had their own solo versions of You Don't Bring Me Flowers on two separate studio albums.
Wow.
And they were both in, I guess, the same like tempo,
okay.
Basically. And so a radio station DJ took the two songs, spliced them together to create a virtual duet and started playing it. And then he started giving out copies of the song to other radio stations, and it became this sort of this weird regional national
wow.
hit. Then the record label started to notice what was going on. They're like, okay, maybe we should just properly record this together.
Right.
So Neil and Barbra got into the studio and did the song, and then it became a huge number one Hot 100 hit.
Wow.
But back in the day, something like that was an event. Donna Summer and Barbra Streisand doing No More Tears, Enough is Enough is a big deal. You know, when, you know, it was just unusual, and it would have to be a very unique circumstance for a duet like that to happen between two megastars.
And now in total, 43 out of the year-end top 100 Hot 100 songs are collaborations.
Thanks for bringing it all back there. Thank you, Katie.
Almost half, if my math serves me.
You know, there's been at least one collaboration in the year-end Hot 100 top 10 every year since 1994. And you may be wondering, what was the first collaborative effort to reach the year-end top 10 on the Hot 100?
I am wondering.
That would be Frank Sinatra and Nancy Sinatra's father-daughter duet of Something Stupid, which was the number 7 song of 1967.
Didn't Robbie Williams do that with Kylie Minogue, your girl Kylie?
No, they
oh,
did.
No, Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman. Yeah. He also did a duet with Kylie that was
he
a
did.
Big one called
I love
Kids,
that song.
Which is a great,
that's
great
what made me
track.
Think of it. Yes. Well, lastly, we thought we'd take a look at some of the interesting, similarly named titles that charted on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart this year.
Okay, so, you know, we're thinking like, you know, ZZ, Fifi, Kiki, Tati. By the way, all of those are 4-letter song titles. All of them are in all caps, all capital letters, and each of them have, you know, kind of a consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel.
Yeah.
So Z-E-Z-E, F-E-F-E, K-E-K-E, T-A-T-I.
Yes.
And then we also have to give an honorable mention to the chorus of Drake's In My Feelings, where he shouted out, Kiki. Yeah.
I feel like I also should mention that your colleague Xander wrote a great article about Kodak Black's ZZ being the highest charting Z song ever on the Billboard Hot 100.
Where's ZZ Top when you need him?
Ah, and then there was I Like It, of course, Cardi B. I Love It. I Lived It.
Mm-hmm.
And I Miss You.
Oh, it's like it's almost like a country song there and just 4 song titles.
That's crazy.
I Like It, I Love It, I Want Some More of It.
I Like It, I Love It, I Miss You, and I Lived It.
Mm-mm-mm.
There you go.
Let's not forget No Brainer, No Excuses, No Mistakes, No Name, No Roots, and No Stylist.
Wow.
Of course.
What a time to be alive, Keith.
It's such a weird, weird year.
What will 2019 bring?
I don't know. More Kikis, Fifis, ZZs?
Maybe.
Tatis? What would be the next one? GG?
Well, I'm sure whatever it is, 6ix9ine or Kodak Black will make it sometime soon.
Maybe Dan Smith from Bastille.
Oh, huh. Interesting you should mention Dan Smith from Bastille.
Segue.
because now it's time for our interview with Dan Smith from Bastille.
Yeah.
Dan and his band are having a killer year, and it's ending with a bang thanks to their unstoppable collaboration, Happier, with Marshmello. The song is Bastille and Marshmello's highest charting song ever on the Hot 100, so far peaking at number 3. It's also number 7 on our year-end Hot Dance / Electronic Songs chart. And speaking of the year-end charts, Bastille has 3 tracks in the top 50 on our year-end Alternative Songs chart, with Happier, Quarter Past Midnight, and World Gone Mad.
They had a good year.
They had a good year.
Yeah.
So we got on the phone with Dan. We talked all about the runaway success of Happier across many different genres. Their new song Grip with Seeb, which is featured on their latest Other People's Heartache mixtape. And what 2019 has in store, including the release of their 3rd album, Doom Days. So please enjoy our interview with Dan Smith from Bastille. No, that means I'll have to leave. Hello to Dan Smith from Bastille, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time. And it's a pretty exciting time to be talking with you because your song Happier with Marshmello is at its number 3 peak on our Billboard Hot 100. And this song is just absolutely everywhere. So first of all, just tell me when you realized what a phenomenon this song had become.
Good question. I guess everyone that we've worked with has sort of been excited about the song for a while. But I guess we've been in London working on our new album and you know, I've been doing a lot of writing for the people and been on tour, so I've sort of been a little bit disconnected from it. And I guess there was a point where the song was just sort of, I don't know, because I've been at home, I think more than I'm on tour, I was aware of, like, oh, this is on the radio quite a lot, like in the UK, and I guess just getting a lot of messages from a load of people, but it's just one of those songs, I think, obviously, because it's a collaboration. We collectively as a band took a couple of weeks off, and Kyle, our keyboard player, went sort of backpacking around California. Will, our bass player, produced a play, and I went, like, traveling with some mates in India for a couple of weeks, which was obviously really fun, but just hearing it there, out of a shop, and having that realization that this song was kind of, you know, we're lucky that it's sort of just done really well, and being like, feeling like a massive fraud in the back of like a tuk-tuk in a traffic jam in like a small Indian town, hearing the song, like, this is so bizarre. it's been amazing to see how it's done. It's really, really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is global, like you said, just, you know, happening to hear it in India. How did you and Bastille end up working with Marshmello in the first place?
Well, excuse me, sorry. I wrote this song a while ago, not really with Bastille in mind. And like I said, kind of everyone in our team was just very adamant that it should be something in our world. It just didn't quite feel totally like it sat with like our records or kind of, you know, with us completely. So I was kind of quite adamant that it should be a collaboration and really, really like all of the productions by Marshmello that I'd heard, like particularly Silence that he did with Khalid, and you know, that was all over there was a point in the UK where that tune and the one that he did with Selena Gomez were kind of just, you know, unavoidable in a really nice way, and it just made me think that of the kind of DJs and EDM people around that he, I don't know, I thought there was something kind of interesting, a bit different, kind of hip hop leaning and tasteful about his stuff. So, you know, we got in touch with him, sent him the song in its original version, and he was like, he sort of pretty much called me straight away and was like, let's get working on this. So we sort of like knocked it back and forth quite a bit. He wrote the drop. I think he tried a load of different drops, and the original structure of the song was really weird. It basically had like 5 sections that cycled. And at the time we weren't sure. We were like, is this genius that it's got 5 sections and I don't know which one's the chorus, or is that the worst idea in the entire world? Anyway, Marshmello was like, that's the worst idea of the entire world. So we We sort of messed around with it for a bit. Kind of, he worked on it, he'd send it over, we'd chat about it. And then I ended up, when I was in LA, going to his studio and spending the day with him and working on it. And it was, you know, I'm really glad we got to actually, you know, work on it in person. Yeah, just, you know, I recorded some more vocals, back home, sent them over. Like, it was just something we kind of properly, like, collaborated on for a little while. And, then people heard it and got excited. And, yeah, the rest has been, you know, the last few months of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message of the song of being selfless and letting someone go seems to really be resonating with people. Have fans been sharing their own personal stories with you after the song came out, since it's such like a deep song?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably what slightly scared me about the song initially. It's so direct, and I think a lot of our, you know, the music that we write is kind of, it's quite melodic, and, you know, they've got big choruses and stuff, but we sort of lean towards slightly probably bizarre, more veiled like song topics. So to have something that is like, you know, kind of super personal and very direct and straight down the line, I think that's the kind of, that's potentially what sort of, you know, really hits people. And all the time, I think, have shared their stories and said back, like, yeah, why it means a lot to them. And that's amazing, you know. It still blows my mind, you know, writing a song in a room, and like some windowless room somewhere, and because of what you're thinking that day, and the idea that it will, you know, reverberate out over the course of like a year or so, and then become a song, and then get on the radio, and then people hear it, and like, oh yeah, and they can relate to it, or it speaks to them, or like articulate something that they weren't, you know, hadn't articulated quite out loud before, or whatever. It's kind of very surreal. But yeah, I think the song, people kind of, you know, some people are like, oh my god, chill out, that's so intense and sad. But also the video that Marshmello's team made. Also seems to really, really resonate with people, and I think that's, we sort of get told a lot about that as well.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, any story of like the love of a close pet will always hit people in the heart for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting how it seems to divide opinion. Pretty much anyone who has a close, like you said, like a close pet, has a really strong reaction to it, and then people that have never really had pets just are like, yeah, fine, whatever.
Another huge thing about this song is just like how it really, you know, blurs genres. Your band has been, you know, put into this rock or alternative category, and obviously Marshmello is EDM. So this is getting like airplay on, you know, K-Rock in LA, rock station, or on like mix shows, you know, DJ mix shows, and of course pop radio, you know, across the world. You know, does it seem like that's kind of a big part of its widespread appeal, like how many different music listeners it's truly reaching?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting it to find a home at alternative, and so that was, you know, awesome that it did, and it resonated with those people, like, and those stations. Like, I'm obviously super grateful for the support that they've given it. I guess for like an EDM song, it's got like proper chugging guitar, when we were working on it, and that the proper kind of that kind of guitar chugging came in, I was like, are we cool? Is this okay? Can we go down this route? I guess that's one of the things that kind of, you know, that allows it to stand out. I also think, you know, just the production's got a lot of space in it, and it kind of allows the song to sort of do its thing. And I feel like it allows, you know, in the true sense of collaboration, like, yeah, there's kind of moments for our band, and there's real moments for him and his production, Marshmello, there as well. So yeah, it's been amazing to see it kind of embraced everywhere, and see how it's done in, I guess, in his world of kind of EDM, in our world of alternative, and then ultimately like crossing the pop. It's fucking nuts.
You know, switching gears a little bit, Bastille has a mixtape coming out, and it's the fourth part of your Other People's Heartache series. And it starts with a cover of Cat Stevens' Wild World, and it made me wonder, that's also the name of your band's last album. Is that cover kind of a nod to that previous album?
Yeah, massively. So, I guess our mixtapes are just a space for us to collaborate with other artists and producers, and it's kind of like the spirit of those mixtapes is you know what led us to do Happier and with Marshmello and all that kind of stuff, and you know we were debating whether or not that song should be standalone or if it should be on the mixtape or where it should live, but I guess you know the first couple of mixtapes that we did were before we had a record out, and they were, you know, at the time I was really inspired by, you know, Nostalgia Ultra by Frank Ocean and The House of Balloons by The Weeknd and their kind of playing with pop culture. It was, you know, an interesting mix of like original songs and interpolations of different, you know, pre-existing productions or songs or whatever. And also the just putting it up online for free idea was something that really appealed. So we made those two, like when we were making our first album, and it was about mixing, you know, film scores and film soundtracks and covers of songs that people kind of know but they don't know where they're from, with film quotes and our own songs and different versions of things, and it was just a really fun kind of canvas to experiment, try production stuff and have fun with other songs, and it's kind of continued. And when we did our third mixtape, we'd released our first album and we were on the road, and we tried to do the whole, like, we learned more about collaborations and original songs. So we got to work with people that we were meeting at festivals and, you know, people we made friends with and were hanging out with. And that was really fun, you know. And then this one, I guess, was meant to be, like, a bit of a bridge between our second album and the new one that we're releasing next year. And I guess, the Wild World, starting with Wild World and ending with Warmth, which is a song that, you know, the quotes kind of Wild World, was meant to be a kind of nice way to tie it all together and to sort of to look back at all the stuff we were talking about on our last album and sort of bring it to a close and bridge our two records. But that song by Cat Stevens is just, it's, you know, for me, my parents used to listen to him all the time when I was a kid, so it was just always all around the house and in the car, and it's like, you know, it's got like almost like lullaby status in terms of how ingrained it is. So getting to do a cover of that was like slightly scary, but also really fun. And I think we just thought it's such a beautiful song. We just did as sparse a version as we could.
Yeah, and it's one of a few other covers on the project as well, including En Vogue's "Don't Let Go." How do you choose these covers that you do for the mixtapes?
I guess they're the songs that, like, that when we think of hearing them, they just make us really happy and they're like undeniable. And also there's something about them, like a certain strain of pop music, I think, particularly from like the kind of around the like 90s, that was like, they're these like sort of massive bangers, but they're kind of insanely sad. And I think, you know, it's a little bit like with Happier. It's about finding those songs that you can take and kind of flip on their heads and you know, have a bunch of guys from London do. I don't know, there's just something about that that's really fun. And we worked with a guy called Craig David, who, you know, is huge in the UK. And when we were kids, he was like one of the biggest pop stars around. And so there's a kind of really nice symmetry to having, you know, someone who we're probably hearing on the radio alongside En Vogue when we were kids, like actually doing the song with us, and then with this new singer called Kianja, who's amazing. So, you know, with the mixtapes, as much as sort of opportunity to collaborate with people that we've known and admired for ages, as it is with new artists who we think are amazing and just want to champion.
Yeah, one of those collaborations is the first release from the mixtape, Grip, with Seeb. And, you know, some fans might recognize the song because you performed it before, albeit a totally, you know, different version of it. So how did that all come together with Seeb?
Yeah, Grip is a song that we played at a festival a couple of years ago, and it was like a big kind of rough around the edges guitar song about just not being able to let go of something and not, well, quite literally not being able to leave a night out. And we've sort of, it's just got a bit overlooked in our camp, I guess. And it was a song that we always really loved and our fans seemed to really connect with, but it never really had an outlet. And the Seed guys got in touch about collaborating on something, and I just thought, like, let's just see what a fresh pair of ears brings to this song, you know. It'll be really interesting to see what happens, because we had no plans to release it. And it kind of came back from them. They did work on it, and it's just so interesting. I mean, hearing a song that you wrote, you know, hearing a tune that I wrote in my bedroom, you know, completely reinterpreted. It was fascinating, because it's quite a weird, dark song, but obviously their production is quite clean and different to necessarily what we would have done. And I was like, it makes me only remember how much I love the song. And then they obviously wrote and added this crazy drop where they pitch my vocals sort of all over the place, and they sort of shoot way up into like the stratosphere. And I guess my first reaction was like, I think I might have kind of laughed a bit and been like, what is this? But I kept coming back to it, and yeah, so we kind of a bit like with the Marshall Engine, we kind of batted it back and forth. I think as a producer and as someone that's co-produced all of the Bastille stuff, it's always interesting, I guess, giving the reins to somebody else. But, you know, in the spirit of wanting to try different things and push ourselves into different spaces and kind of feel a bit uncomfortable sometimes, it's like, that's exactly what the mixtapes are about. That's what they're there for. I think with us, like, we're a pop band, but we make alternative music, we make electronic music, like, we make acoustic music. This year for us has been about trying new things, and that's why it's been really nice to work on this mixtape alongside our album. And then also, we did a tour earlier this year in Europe where we took all of our songs and completely flipped them on their heads with an orchestra and a gospel choir, and got on a couple of buses and just toured around the UK and toured around Europe. And I guess we're enjoying being able to go and play classical versions of our songs with a massive gospel choir, and then also, you know, work with people like Marshmello and Sieb and loads of new artists and experiment and try different stuff. Like, it's nice. I think it's kind of the like genreless unboxing of things is a nice time to exist in, I think, in that respect.
Definitely. And you mentioned working on your next album called Doom Days. It's coming next year. That's a pretty heavy title. So what is the vibe of the project so far?
It is, but then I guess like, our first album is called Bad Blood, our second album is called Wild World. So we're not known for like overbursting joy and happiness and flowers and puppies. But it's basically, I've been sort of calling it an apocalyptic party album, and it's kind of loosely charts the course of a night, and it's just about, you know, it's like a through path from my last album. And if that was the kind of red pill of seeing all these massive changes in the world and like changes in our lives and slightly freaking out about them and trying to figure out how to get your head around it and how to react, because there's no answer to that, and it's just confusing, like, full stop. This album is a little bit about acknowledging that over the last couple of years things have gotten stranger and no less confusing, but how important it is to kind of also look inwards a little bit and try and find moments of like fun and joy and escapism. And so it's kind of about escapism and for better or worse, it's there's a point to which it's healthier, and there's also like there's a line that you can cross quite easily. But musically, we want it to be, you know, it's kind of in places it nods to sort of like 90s British dance music. It's not a dance record, when I say apocalyptic party album, by party I mean like quite a sort of like British rough on the edges tradition of like, you know, probably drinking too much, staying out late. You know, it's like pubs and house parties and raves. It's not like champagne popping parties with like, you know, glamorous people and stuff, because that's not that's not really like, that's not our life, and that's not like how we personally do things. So we wanted it to feel kind of warm and fuzzy and a weird like nighttime record. So yeah, it's just kind of slightly odd journey through the night. And you know, the title can be interpreted in, you know, whatever way you choose to interpret it, but yeah, it felt kind of fitting. And there's something about the, like, it just sounds quite dramatic, which I quite which I really like.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Congratulations on your massive year, and we're really looking forward to hearing all the new music next year.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Sorry that you had to listen to me whittle on for ages.
Yeah, right. No, thank you. Thank you so much. It was so great talking with you, and have a great show tonight at Barclays Center.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks so much. Take care.
All right, you too.
Thank you so much to Dan for taking the time to talk with me. Congratulations on the many achievements of 2018, and good luck on all the new music coming next year.
Looking to upgrade your audio? Get Powerhouse Sound for your music and podcasts.
Shure sound isolating earphones provide immersive audio and complete freedom in a custom comfort fit.
Pair with your Bluetooth device or use the innovative detachable cable system to plug directly into any device. Flexibility never sounded so impressive.
So visit shure.com/listening to save on select models during the holidays.
And now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Would you believe 20 years ago this week, Cher's comeback smash, Believe, debuted on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. The song, which famously employed a vocoder-like process on Cher's voice, premiered on the list dated December 19th, 1998, at a rather lowly number 99. But eventually it hit number one on the list dated March 13th, 1999, and spent 4 weeks atop the list. It was Cher's first top 10 since 1989's Just Like Jesse James, and her first number one since way, way back in 1974 with Dark Lady. God, this is going to be terrible. Like, everything's going to be...
The whole thing is sung through.
The whole thing is sung through.
Pop Shop, we decided to do a musical episode for our last podcast of 2018.
From Seasons of Love to Cher. Oh, I'm flipping yeah, my invisible hair.
The people cannot see you flipping your hair.
Okay, Believe would go on to finish 1999 as the year's number one Hot 100 single. Since we're also talking about year-end charts, it was our number one year-end Hot 100 number one of 1999. And it would earn Cher her first Grammy Award.
That ain't right.
For Best Dance Recording. Cher, she is endlessly undefeatable.
Yeah.
Just when you think.
Well, but it's just wild. Like, she had so much classic music that is her first Grammy. It's wild.
You know,
it's wild.
The Grammys were cuckoo.
Yeah, they are. They continue to be a
little
cuckoo.
They continue to be cuckoo. That's a whole nother show.
Cuckoo.
We love you, Recording Academy, but, you know, there's lots of kooky things with your awards. In 2015, when I interviewed Cher about her then 50-year anniversary on our charts, she said that, quote, "I honestly think the most fun I ever had making a song was Believe, because you didn't know it was me in the beginning, and I was so excited." And she was referring to, like, the voice on the song.
Well, I literally thought it was, first of all, a dude when I first heard it.
No matter how hard I try.
I had no idea, and I heard it in dance class, because I was a young... last then, and they played, no, I was definitely eight, like 17 or 18, but they played the song in dance class, and I thought, wow, great song, who does this, like, what guy does this, and did not find out for like a week or so later that it was Cher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I asked her if, you know, that was the intention, if the sort of the processing of the voice was meant to be that way, and she said, no, it just came out of desperation. It turns out when she was recording the song, it just didn't pop. Something just wasn't working. They didn't like the way it just, she felt like the verses were kind of boring and it didn't really get good until the chorus came along, which was like, that sort of was immediately catchy, but she felt like the verses were kind of missing something. And so she left the studio that day and she went home and she was watching TV, and she was in England at the time, in London. She was watching a TV performance of an artist and they were using a vocoder on their voice in this TV performance. She's like, that's it. She went to the studio next day, told the producer to put the kind of the process on it. And they did. And both her and the producer were like, oh my God, let's just hold on to this moment. This just is amazing. But just because they thought it was great, a lot of people didn't think it was great.
Sure.
She had to fight with record executives who thought that people wouldn't recognize her voice. There were record label execs who were like, but the German fans won't know who this is. And she's like, over my dead body, you're not changing this.
Yeah.
And obviously, Cher won out, and you shouldn't argue with Cher.
Don't argue with Cher. That's the moral of this story.
The song became one of her signature hits. And, you know, she continues to perform it to this day, and she's on tour right now, so amazing. Go check her out. And, you know, by the way, this year, Cher came back with a big new album, and she was in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and
she announced that she's going to do a memoir and a biopic in the next couple of years, too, Keith.
She just won the Kennedy Center Honor, and she has a show on Broadway called The Cher Show.
Never argue with Cher.
No.
She's coming back. Always coming back.
Cher is amazing. Legendary, eternal diva. Also really freaking cool.
Yeah.
I mean, just
hilarious.
Saying.
Hilarious.
I mean, I've had the great opportunity of, like, actually, I've talked to her on the phone a couple times, and I interviewed her once in person at her house in Malibu, and we talked for more than 20 minutes, which was way more time than I was anticipating, right. And it was on video. She was a hoot. She was so fun. She was so nice. It was just, she's everything that you think she is. Like, when you see Adele, like, conversing with people on TV, that's probably how she is in real life.
Right.
And Cher is the same way, where I'm like, if she's like that, I don't think she turns something on.
Right,
I think that is just naturally Cher's personality.
Right.
She's as real as you think she is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cher's amazing. So there you have it. 20 years ago this week, Cher's Eternal, Believe, debuted on the Hot 100 chart. Do you believe? Okay, we've reached the end of our show and the end of 2018.
Wow. How? What?
I know.
Why?
What?
When?
Where? Kiki.
We're just shuffling papers.
What's going on? Well, I mean, we'll be back at the top of 2019.
Yes.
We'll be back the second week. Rejoin us then as normal. We're taking a little break for Christmas and New Year's those listeners should.
And not giving away secrets, but we already have interviews, like, ready to go for you next year. So just, wait.
We do. any parting words about 2018?
Oh, man.
Or just today?
Oh, man. That's a lot.
It's been a great year full of great guests. And
it really has.
Yeah.
No, it's like, if we look back at the list of guests for this year.
Which we literally don't have in front of us.
It's great, though. I know it's great.
I know it's great, too.
I lived it.
I'm convinced of it, too. Ed Sheeran was in there somewhere.
Ed Sheeran.
We had
Gwen Stefani.
We had Five Sauce on.
Five Sauce for our five-year anniversary.
For our five-year anniversary. We had all sorts of people.
Yeah.
Go check out. Go, if you're in the mood, if you haven't, you know what? Just like they used to say on NBC back in the 90s, you know, it's new to you if you haven't seen it yet.
True.
So, you know, if there's an episode that you missed this year, go back and scroll through on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider.
Hell, if you missed it last year, check that one out.
I mean, you scroll back to 5 years. You could watch some of our... No, don't listen to some of our early stuff. It's not so hot. what song should we go out on?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Auld Lang Syne?
Oh, it is like... It's that time of year. I actually, you know what I love is What Are You Doing New Year's Eve?
Who's that by?
Well, I have there's lots of versions of it. I have a few favorites. Oof.
Well, we'll surprise you in a moment, or?
No, my favorite, because he's always my favorite, is Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, what a shock.
So definitely that one.
All right, see you guys in 2019.
Bye.
What are you doing, New Year? New Year's Eve.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.